Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Tuesday, September 26th public hearing. This is the reconvened public hearing regarding conditional use application number 2022-06 at 1359 as filed by Linlow Governor Crossing LLC and Sheets, co-applicant regarding a master plan development for land generally located in the southwest quadrant of intersection of West Governor Road and Fishburne Road. So most folks here in the audience have been here for the last few months for our hearings. Chairman Abruzzo is out of the country on a trip that was planned long ago, so he won't be with us tonight. So the four of us will be listening to the closing arguments, and Chairman Abruzzo will be able to read the transcripts when he is back from his trip abroad. So, as we always mention, all of our meetings are recorded for the purpose of creating accurate minutes. So we have a transcriber here this evening, so any of our parties that are offering comments this evening, please come to the podium, make sure you clearly state your name, and speak clearly into the microphone so that everybody here can hear you, and also so that our transcriber can take accurate minutes. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our solicitor this evening, Mr. Armstrong, who will get us moving with tonight's agenda.
Thank you. So we're here solely for listening to and accepting closing arguments. The evidentiary hearings have been closed.
Can we start with a roll call, please?
Sure.
So, Carter Wyckoff.
Here.
Natalie Nutt.
Here.
Michael Corrado.
Here.
And Rick Zamuda.
Here.
Thank you.
Sure. So as I was saying, the evidentiary hearings associated with this application have been closed. So the record is closed. My understanding is that the last hearing in this matter, there was a significant amount of public comment accepted, so the public comment portion of the hearing is closed. What we're here for this evening is to listen to those parties that wish to make their closing arguments. In reviewing the transcripts from your last hearing, I did see that there's five, maybe six, of the parties that wish to make closing arguments. It's Mr. Crist, Mr. Winter, Mr. Bloomberg, Mr. Newman, Mr. Strong, and Mr. Greenberg, potentially Mr. Greenberg. So with that, it is also my understanding that I think preliminarily we're allotting 10 minutes per closing argument, as was discussed at the prior hearings. So with that, I don't know if there's any particular order that you want to go in. Mr. Strong, would you like to go first?
Sure.
I finally get to stand. Good evening. You all know Jamie Strong with McNeese Falls in Newark. Here on behalf of the co-applicants of the Linlow Governor Crossing LLC and Sheets Inc. As you know, we have been gathering here once or twice a month for hearings on this application since September of last year. We've experienced fall, winter, spring, summer, and now fall again together over the course of the hearings. And the hearing on August 24th was our 15th night of hearings on this application. With each hearing lasting approximately 3 hours, we have spent a considerable amount of time together reviewing this application over the past year. On behalf of the co-applicants, I would like to thank the supervisors for providing our project team with the opportunity to present this project to both you and the interested residents of the township that have been attending the hearings as well. I would also like to thank township staff that have been faithfully and diligently attending, and also like to thank in particular the court reporter who has been diligently and carefully keeping a record of everything that has been said over the course of the hearings. I think our transcripts now are over 1,600 pages in length, so that is a lot of information to take down over the past year. At the beginning of the hearings, I said that we, the co-applicants, believe that this project would provide important residential and community services and opportunities, as well as much-needed road improvements for the area, and that the project would be a great addition to the township and its residents. After all of the hearings, all of the testimony and exhibits, we still believe that to be the case. I mentioned the first hearing was last September, but that was not the start of the approval process for the applicants. The applicants have been working with the township for some time to develop the master plan for this proposed mixed-use development project before the application was even filed. The zoning ordinance requires that a developer proposing a master plan must submit a sketch plan for review prior to formal submission of a master plan application. That sketch plan is presented both to the Planning Commission and to the Board of Supervisors for informal discussions, questions, feedback, et cetera. Following that requirement of the ordinance, the applicants filed a sketch plan that was filed in 2021. They met with both the Township Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors to discuss the project. They also met with the Township's Planning Committee to discuss the project. Following that process, the applicants made changes to the project in response to the comments received, and the application that is currently before you was then filed in June of last year. The application was reviewed by the Township Planning Commission at its meeting in July of last year, and the Planning Commission recommended to the Board of Supervisors that the application be approved. We spent a lot of time talking about this proposed master plan. It's important to remember what a master plan actually is. A master plan under the Derry Township Zoning Ordinance is an optional planning tool that is intended to encourage developers to, quote, assemble large parcels of land to create a coordinated and well-conceived development, which otherwise may not be created on small parcels of land, close quote. Here, the property is located in the township's mixed-use, Hershey mixed-use zoning district, as well as two overlay districts, the Southern Core Overlay 13 and the Central Master Plan Development Approval Area Overlay. And within that district and those two overlays, the master plan is permitted by conditional use. Here, as you know, the developer is proposing to assemble 22 smaller parcels of land and portions of two additional parcels of land to create this development, which cannot otherwise be created on the individual existing smaller parcels of land. The master plan process also allows the developer some flexibility from requirements in the zoning ordinance that would otherwise be applicable. Here, really, there are only two that are implicated. First, the developer is permitted an increase in the maximum permitted impervious coverage of 10%, and this project is proposing an additional 6% of impervious coverage over what would otherwise be permitted. And multifamily apartment dwellings are permitted as part of the master plan development area. So those really are the two benefits to the developer of going through this long master plan approval process, some additional impervious coverage in the multifamily apartment dwellings. In addition to the request for approval of the master plan, the application also requests conditional use approval for three proposed uses that are also permitted by conditional use. Those uses are a fuel service major, which would be to permit the proposed heat, multifamily apartment dwellings, which would permit the proposed residential dwellings that would be located on the second and third floors of the mixed-use building, and a group child care facility, which would be to permit the proposed Kitty Academy. As I mentioned, the master plan and those three proposed uses are all permitted by conditional use. It's important to note that a use that is permitted by conditional use in the zoning ordinance is a use that the Board of Supervisors, previously acting in a legislative capacity, determined that those uses are appropriate uses in this particular zoning district and the associated overlay districts, provided the applicant can demonstrate that the specific objective standards set forth in the zoning ordinance for each use are satisfied. Here, the standards for a fuel service major use are set forth in section 225-501.19. The standards for a multifamily apartment dwelling are set forth in section 225-501.2. And the standards for a group child care facility use are set forth in section 225-501.52. Those sections of the zoning ordinance set forth the specific objective criteria for those uses that an applicant must demonstrate are satisfied. And, you know, we've had more than 40 hours of testimony over the course of the 15 hearing dates, Over 60 exhibits have been introduced, and as I mentioned, the hearing transcript is over 1,600 pages in length. The record has been closed, and it is now the responsibility of the board to review the testimony, to review the exhibits, and make the determination if the application has satisfied these specific objective standards for the uses that are set forth in the sections of the zoning ordinance that I just stated. When you're reviewing the testimony, it's important to recognize that over the course of the last year, we have had countless hours of testimony that really, at the end of the day, are unrelated to those specific objective standards that the board must review when acting in its quasi-judicial capacity and rendering a decision on the application. In the interest of time, I'm just going to provide one example, and that example relates to traffic. Obviously, there has been a significant amount of time and testimony on the topic of traffic. The board heard testimony from the applicant's traffic engineer, Greg Creasy. Mr. Creasy testified over the course of three nights of hearings in December, January, and February. The board also heard expert testimony from the township's own traffic engineer, Eric Stump. Mr. Stump testified over the course of four nights of hearings in March, April, May, and June. That is seven nights of hearings from December of last year to June of this year, and approximately 20 hours of expert testimony on the topic of traffic. However, when you look at the zoning ordinance on the topic of traffic, the specific objective standards for a master plan only require the following. Section 225-501.58A2A Romanet 4 requires that the lot must provide for direct points of ingress and egress in a manner to assure convenient and safe access which will not cause undue congestion or hazards on local roads. And then the second section is section 225-501.58A4G Romanet 14. And that section simply requires that the applicant submit a traffic impact study meeting the requirements of Chapter 185 of the Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance. With respect to the first requirement, the access requirement, the applicant's traffic engineer testified that the proposed access for the project complies with the access requirements. In addition, the township's traffic engineer testified that in his expert opinion, the proposed access points will assure convenient and safe access to and from the project and will not cause undue congestion or hazards on local roads. With respect to the traffic impact study requirement, for a master plan, the zoning ordinance simply requires that a traffic impact study be submitted together with all of the other plans and materials and information required by Section 225-501-58A4G be submitted with the master plan application. The ordinance language doesn't even require an approved traffic study. It just requires that a traffic study be submitted with the application. Here, the traffic impact study was submitted as part of the application, and a copy was submitted as Exhibit A19. A revised traffic impact study was submitted as Exhibit A29. During the course of the hearing process, PennDOT actually approved the traffic impact study, and a copy of that approval letter was submitted as Exhibit A28. The applicant's traffic engineer testified that the traffic impact study was prepared and submitted in compliance with the requirements of the Township Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance. One caveat that he noted is the township's 10-year horizon requirement, which conflicts with PennDOT's required 5-year horizon. The township's traffic engineer also testified that the traffic impact study was prepared and submitted to the township in accordance with the subdivision and land development ordinance requirements. He also testified that all of his review comments relating to the traffic impact study have been addressed, with the exception of the horizon year requirement. He explained that the horizon year requirement is that PennDOT requires a 5-year horizon and the township ordinance requires a 10-year horizon. However, he testified that it is typical for the township to grant a waiver from that requirement to permit the 5-year horizon required by PennDOT. So we had expert testimony from the two chapters. Yeah.
You can keep going, but you're at 10.
Okay. Oh, we've been going a year. Give me a couple more minutes. So the expert testimony from the traffic engineers, including the township's traffic engineer, was that the traffic study was submitted with the application. It was prepared in compliance with the requirements of the Subdivision Land Development Ordinance, and it has now, in fact, been approved. Similarly, the application, testimony, and exhibits demonstrate that the specific objective standards for not only the master plan, but also the fuel service major use, the multifamily apartment dwellings, and the group child care facility use have all been satisfied. Although there are a significant number of requirements for a master plan, the specific objective requirements for those individual uses are significantly less. And for example, the specific objective standards for multifamily apartment dwellings in the zoning ordinance require that the apartments must be served by public water and sewer, and that the apartments must be proposed as part of a master plan development. Those are the only requirements for multifamily apartment dwellings. Clearly, those standards have been satisfied here. With respect to those standards, it's important to note that the Township's Director of Community Development, Chuck Emmerich, reviewed the application and prepared a memo for the Board of Supervisors with respect to the application and the ordinance requirements that are applicable. A copy of the most recent version of that memo was admitted as Exhibit 831. In that memo, he reviewed the specific objective standards for each of the proposed uses and stated either that the standards were satisfied or that the standards were not applicable. Mr. Emmerich did not find any specific objective standards for the proposed uses that he found were not satisfied by the application. One other comment with respect to the master plan ordinance requirements, Section 225-501.58A4C provides that the master plan and material submitted with the application, quote, shall not be required to meet the standards prescribed for preliminary or final land development plan or for the issuance of a building permit, so long as they provide reasonable detail of the proposed use or development and a sufficient basis for determination as to its compliance with the regulations. On too many nights, we got caught up in minutia unrelated to the ordinance requirement, which is simply the plan does not have to be at the level of a land development plan or a subdivision plan or even a plan submitted with a building permit application. Again, this is a first step. The land development plan process would follow after this process.
Jane, we do. I know there's at least four others that want to make closing arguments, so if you can kind of wrap it up.
Yep, I just want to briefly review the standards that are applicable to a conditional use, and then I'll be done. When reviewing a conditional use application, it's important to understand the standard of review. Uses that are permitted in a zoning ordinance by conditional use evidence a legislative decision by the township that the particular uses near the master plan and the three other proposed uses are consistent with the zoning plan and presumptively consistent with the health, safety, and welfare of the community. A conditional use application that satisfies the specific objective standards of the zoning ordinance must be granted unless opponents present sufficient evidence that A, the use will generate adverse impacts not normally generated by this type of use, and B, that those impacts will pose a substantial threat to the health and safety of the community. The courts have clearly stated that such evidence cannot consist of mere speculation, bald assertions, or personal opinions and perceptions of the effect of the use on the community. Rather, opponents must demonstrate that there is a high degree of probability that the use will cause a substantial harm that is not normally associated with the proposed use. Here, the applicants have demonstrated that the master plan development has satisfied all of the objective criteria for the uses that are required under the zoning ordinance. The opponents of the plan have presented personal opinions and perceptions with respect to the effect of the master plan on the community. They've asked you to give anecdotal testimony the same way that you give expert testimony, but that is not what the law provides. The law is clear that the opponents must demonstrate that there is a high degree of probability that the use will cause a substantial harm not normally associated with the proposed use.
Jane.
This is my last statement. We find ourselves now at the end of this long hearing process. My request to you, the board, is that you review the testimony and exhibits that were submitted over the course of the 15 hearing dates, that you review the specific objective criteria in the zoning ordinance for the master plan and the other proposed uses, and after determining that all of the applicable requirements have been satisfied, that you grant the application. So thank you, and thank you for the indulgence a couple extra minutes. Thank you.
Why don't we go with, I'm not sure if there was an order when you did cross-examination during these hearings. If there was, if I move them around, feel free to jump out. But Mr. Crisp, would you like to go second?
I'm waiting for my fellow to show up who's got my...
All right, is Mr. Winter here?
Yes, he's here.
Would you like to go, Mr. Winter?
If he doesn't, I'll have Dave do it. But I have.
Mr. Winter. Again, I don't mean to be rude interrupting you guys during your closing argument, but if we're going to get through this tonight, we're going to have to try and stick as close to the 10 minutes as possible.
Well, first of all, thank you for your attention and patience in sitting through the many hours of testimony. Remember, you wanted this job. So we're here to consider the Governor's Crossing conditional use application, and the decision that you make in this case will have a major and lasting impact on the residents of Gary Township, both now and for years to come. And in making your decision, you must consider two important factors. First, it is your sworn duty to protect the interest of the community you were elected to serve. Second, under the Gary Township Zoning Ordinance, Section 225.501K, it is the applicant who has the burden of proof under our zoning ordinance and must prove by a high degree of probability and with convincing evidence based on facts and not mere speculation that this project will not adversely affect the health and safety of our community, that it will not overburden public services such as roads and stormwater management, and that it will not change the essential character of the existing neighborhood. After you review all the testimony and consider all the exhibits, you will conclude that the applicant has failed to meet its burden of proof, and you must deny this conditional use application. The applicant is asking Gary Township for too much. The applicant proposes to construct too many buildings, too close to too many gas pumps, at an intersection that is already choked by too much traffic, using a traffic study that was too old, and then proposes to solve the choked traffic problem by using a cul-de-sac that is too narrow and too close to an existing apartment building and a daycare center, while taking too much lane from existing property owners along too narrow Fishburne Road, and then constructing a concrete median that will have too much of a negative impact on an existing business. So due to time constraints, here are just a few examples of the applicant asking for too much while failing to sustain its burden of proof. The existing neighborhood consists of single-family homes with one small apartment building and a few locally owned businesses. But the applicant wants to put four commercial buildings, each of which is larger in area and height than any of the existing buildings, on attractive land at the corner of what is verified to be one of the three most congested traffic intersections in a three-county area. Mr. Gates would have you believe that based on his intuition, that's what he testified to, his intuition, he knows that his plan will improve the traffic congestion. But his entire application is based on a flawed traffic study that ignored a key intersection at Elm Avenue, used traffic counts that are too old and were obtained during the COVID restrictions, and then fed all of this data into a computer program that is based on national statistics and not based on the reality of the Governor Road, Fishburne Road congestion that we know exists every day in our community. The applicant's solution to this existing traffic congestion problem is to bring more traffic into the area with the four buildings, and then how do you believe that all of this will be solved by the relocation of Sand Hill Road? But the new signalized intersection uses as its fourth leg a 14.5-foot wide alley that is actually merely a long cul-de-sac because it has only one point of entrance on a public road. And that cul-de-sac is owned but not maintained by Gary Township. To widen the cul-de-sac would require taking land from residents who live on the east side of Fishburne Road and also residents who live on the west side of Almond Drive in the Cocoa Towns development. However, the applicant isn't done with the residents of Fishburne Road because it also needs to widen both sides of Fishburne Road, which is already a narrow road. And this would require taking land from property owners on both sides of Fishburne Road and then eliminating their ability to make a left-hand turn out of their driveway. The applicant also proposes to build a concrete median down the middle of part of Fishburne Road, which is already a narrow road with virtually no shoulder. Now, this median is of critical importance to the applicant. It's an element of the right-in, right-out port chop that provides the crucial second exit from this property. This second exit is essential to being allowed to construct the three-story building with restaurant and retail on the first floor and 40 apartment units on the top two floors. There can be no apartment building without that second exit. However, to get that second exit, the right-in, right-out requires the construction of the median in order to eliminate left-hand turns out of the project onto Fishburne Road. So you have to build the median in order to have the right-in, right-out, which is the crucial second exit from the project, and without that second exit, no apartment building. But this median places a wall in front of Ron's barbershop, which restricts his customers to making only right-hand turn ins and right-hand turns out, and it adversely affects his constitutional right to access to a public road. Now, it would be one thing if the common good of the community would be served by building a median on Fishburne Road. But the only entity that benefits is the applicant, and it does so at great harm to an existing business. This type of planning that benefits only the applicant at the expense of others is also evident in the plans for the buildings on the site. Section 225.501.19, which Mr. Strong just referenced, our zoning ordinance talks about gas stations, and it talks about the fact that there has to be at least 200 feet of separation between a major fuel facility and an existing residence, unless separated by a public street, not an alley. Now, even though all four proposed buildings are in one unified plane, the applicant attempts to utilize a loophole, and it says that the required distance is not applicable in this case because the building with the 40 apartment units will not exist when the gas station is built. Now, as soon as the gas station is built, obviously, the applicant can begin construction of the apartment building and thereby circumvent the intent of our ordinance. Regardless of the order of construction, the existence of 12 gas pumps located approximately 200 feet from 40 apartments poses a clear public health risk to the residents, and the adverse effect is made worse when you look in the other direction from the 12 pumps and you see a 12,000 square foot daycare center with 150 students and 21 staff members. Those students and their parents will have their health and safety adversely affected every morning and afternoon as they try to walk from the parking lot where they park their car so that they can get to the entrance to the daycare while they navigate and cross a driveway that is estimated to have 768 trips a day coming from Governor Road to the Sheets. And included in this traffic count will be 57-foot-long fuel delivery trucks and other large delivery trucks servicing the other buildings that will pass by the daycare area on a regular basis. When you review the testimony of Mr. Gates and his paid witnesses, it's startling to realize just how much each witness did not know about the details of this project. We were repeatedly told that either the witness didn't know the answer or they deferred to some future witness who also didn't know the answer. While the volume of testimony is immense, it's 1,650 pages and I've read it twice, the important answers are lacking. But incredibly, one answer that was not given is the fact that the applicant has never gone to the immediate neighbors and discuss this project with them and talk to them about the eliminating the adverse impact that he's going to have on their neighborhood. Mr. Gates told you from the outset that he believes this plan creates no problems and actually solves the traffic problems, but it does just the opposite. The record shows that this plan creates significant health and safety problems for the existing residents and neighbors. It makes an already bad traffic congestion considerably worse, and it creates a totally commercial development in a mixed-use neighborhood. In contrast to the testimony of the applicant's witnesses, you heard 32 township residents whose testimony in opposition was based on their actual knowledge of existing conditions in our community, based on facts and not mere speculation. As the Board of Supervisors, how do you respond to the application of Governor's Crossing? It's simple. You just cross it off. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Winter. Mr. Bloomberg.
I'm just frustrated as you guys. I've been to every single hearing. I don't know you very well. I haven't seen you much here.
Patrick.
I gotta turn the volume up, sorry.
Yeah.
So, my name is Ronald Blumberg. I'm the owner of 637 Fishburg Road, Hershey, Pennsylvania, 17036. I'm also the business owner there too. Okay? So your job and duty was to serve us and what's best for the community, especially that American flag standing over there for that nice pole. If you guys want to turn around and look at the flag, because that's what we represent, especially in our community. Our land was founded on compromise. The summer of 1787, starting a constitutional convention, our entire government is based on compromise. Compromise is solving problems together as a country community, not as a separate party. Compromise is not always acceptable on issues, morality, ethics, but in politics and everyday life, we must work to find a common ground with our fellow Americans. Compromise is winning a little and losing a little, but that's not exactly a bad thing. All the hearings we had before you, our community asked questions and solutions to do things differently. We also came up with ideas concerning our community, as the other party has not once compromised on this master plan. Not once. Today, I'm asking you, the board, what is your compromise on this project? For me, example, the other party wants to take away 50% of my access and limit my turn in and outs of my property. So again, board, what do they lose? You, the board, have the right to compromise on our behalf as a community. Will you do so? I should have the right to provide a good service and convenience for the customers in our community. I have constantly grown my business because they constantly move away or they just pass on. So I always have to build my business. Taking away my 50% of my access will affect my convenience of my customers. My customers are part of this community, and I try to provide the best services I can. They are not just customers. They come part of my shop like a family. Not only we build a business, we also build friendships. We care about each other and help each other out in any way. It is not uncommon for me to have four generations coming in my shop. They do so because they care and I provide a great service. We become friends. We become part of each other's lives, long-lasting relationships. Fourth, be the compromise. Our community has spoken. Now it's your turn. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rubler. Mr. Crist, are you ready?
Yes, we can go.
Great.
You need to hook into your system so people can follow, see the pictures. You can.
If we have the capabilities, but this is closing argument, so.
Well, this is. We have the capability. I just want everybody to follow along with what I'm reading.
Great.
Well, if you're hooked up, I'm going to have pass out a handout.
Mr. Crist, this is not an evidentiary hearing.
This is the list of what is in the conditional use ordinance. It's a copy of the ordinance.
Well, I think the board is well aware they have copies of the ordinance. I don't know if you have to hand something up. Then I want to make it very clear, this is not an evidentiary hearing.
I'm not doing an evidentiary. I'm simply asking you to read out of the ordinance and I want people to follow along.
Okay. Following your closing argument, we'll probably get it back.
Okay, fine. But I just want people to see what I'm reading and what I'm reading out of
it. Mr. Crist, if you can also provide Mr. Strong a copy.
Yes, I will provide Mr. Strong a copy. All right. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Give me number 7. There we go.
Mr. Winter, would you like a copy?
Oh, no, sir.
I've given him a copy already.
Thank you.
Number 7. This is a conditional use hearing. It is different from a development plan. In a traditional development plan, you get your approvals subject usually to conditions. You're going to get your DEP permit, you're going to get your sewer permit, you're going to get your HOP permit. This is a conditional use hearing. The rules are changed in a conditional use hearing. Basically, they accelerate everything. Conditional uses are typically dealing with large projects, complex issues that have a significant interest and impact on the community. Therefore, they want to get the kinks out of it up front, for lack of a better term. The conditional use ordinances are specifically drafted so that you focus on health and safety issues. There is a requirement that these issues be addressed by the time the conditional use is filed. Not we'll give you, traditionally like we do in a traditional development, we'll pass it and then you go get the HOP permit later. No. What this means is that all your permits have to be in-house and lined up at the time of filing of the conditional use, or very at the absolute latest by the time of the last hearing, which is today. There's the key case in this, and I didn't have a chance to finish my brief, and this will be in the actual brief when I put it there, but an applicant for special exception or conditional use must demonstrate that his proposed use meets the applicable requirements when the application is filed. A promise to comply or conditions compelling future use, i.e., will get the HOP permit later, cannot cure an otherwise non-compliant ordinance. This ordinance completely fails. And I'll tell you why. And I just handed out, and if you would go please to number 9. All right. These are the conditional use ordinances. And just for the record, so that everybody knows what we're talking about, 225 is our zoning ordinance. 501 is chapter 1. That's chapter 5. That's the conditional use chapter. And then when you get down, can you get down to the bottom of the page? You get numbers 501.58. 58 is the requirements that are added on by a master plan. Everybody always talks about 501K1, 2, and 3, and we throw them out all the time? Will it affect the residents of the neighborhood? Will it overgrow the roads? Will it change the essential character of the neighborhood? We miss number four. Number four says this use must meet all other requirements of the chapter which apply. And that drops us down to the bottom. The master plan site requirements require that at the time of first approval, which is now, access must already be taken care of. Not that we're going to widen the road later, we're going to move Fishburne Road later, we're going to move Sand Hill Road later. It's all got to be done before you file the conditional use. That's what actually conditional use requires. All everything get done so that the conditional use is just sort of the icing on the cake. Could I have 9.1? 9.1, which is the next one. This is what it says, specifically, 225.5.1, site requirements. Property subject to a master plan shall, at the time of first approval, which is now, have, and we drop down, the following requirement, access. The lot must provide for direct points of ingress and egress in a manner to assure convenient and safe access, which will not cause undue congestion or hazards on local roads. Which means you've got to have it done. We don't know that you're going to get the road, Sand Hill Road moved. We don't know that you're going to get the stoplight. We don't know that you're going to get Fishburne Road widened. You haven't met that requirement, which requires it to be done by now. They've got this thing backwards. They've got the cart before the horse. They should have done all this and then come for the conditional use. They don't get the conditional use. Could I have number 11, please? I want to show you something. We talked about the use will not affect the health or safety of the neighborhood or change the essential character of the neighborhood. When I was going through the transcript, I was particularly struck by the testimony of Doug Endy and his daughter, Erin Gatens, who said they won't be able to make a left turn out of their driveway if the stoplight goes in, and then they'd want to put a barrier from the stoplight down because the traffic, and even if they don't put the barrier, the line of traffic at that stoplight all the time is going to prevent them from making a left turn out of their driveways. So I said to myself, what does poor Erin Gatens have to do if she, when they put this in, she has to go visit her father? Right now she can go up one block up to Sand Hill around the corner to her father's house. If this goes in, she goes all the way down Fishburne to the Giant, then makes a left turn, goes all the way up Cocoa, goes back on 322, back down Fishburne to the new stoplight, makes a right turn at the stoplight, comes down Sand Hill to her father's house that she already hits. That's what they got to do. This is how. This is a perfect example of changing the essential character of the neighborhood. Right there. Keep in mind that this thing has actually got a lot of conflicts of interest to it. If you approve this subject to the quote-unquote HOP, you're actually going round robin. Because the HOP requires what? A stoplight. And who has to approve the stoplight? You do. The stoplight has to be issued out in the name of the township. The permit for the stoplight is a TE-130 that the township applies for. So you're being asked to approve something that's just your own approval. You should know right now whether or not you're going to give them the stoplight. If you're not, you turn it down and we're done and we go home. But it isn't just the stoplight. There's one other thing that is really important here. And I'm going to call this number 18. Go to 18, please. This comes off the various documents. I put it together on one slide. The top is page 2 of the master plan. And you will note that what it says, and this is a standard road, that the right current right-of-way on Fishburne Road is 33 foot wide. You can see that I got it circled in, I should have my, do we have the thing in? Here. 25. You've only got a 24-foot cartway. That's standard for a road of this size and this age that PennDOT has. Go down to Mr. Stump to the bottom of the page. I took this off of his T4. I blew it up, but it kind of got a little blurry. But he says to widen, when you get done with the widening of the road, you're going to need 33 feet for the three lanes. Now, you've only got 33-foot wide right-of-way, which means that you're 6 foot short. PennDOT says state roads are widened from center, which means you take them out from the middle, and you got to widen both sides equally. It's got to come out equally. Go to 19, please. Show you what the net effect of all that is. This is Mr. Stump's 19. If you're going to widen that and take 3 feet from either side, you've got to take it from each of those property owners. That is a total of 473 feet that has got to be taken. That, to put that in length of cars, at 18 feet a car, that's 28 car lengths. It is 8 properties on the eastern side. That's the eastern side is the commercial, and the western side is the residential. To that point, you have to take 3 feet on either side of that. PennDOT does not condemn for private developers. So if the people won't sell you that piece of ground, you, the township, have to condemn that for these people. One more point. One other thing that you need to get with this, when you talk about construction, what do you have? Dump trucks, bulldozers, and backhoes. You can't widen a road and think what a disaster that's going to be while you widen that. Look what happened with these sinkhole just not a couple months ago. You have to close off the road or cut it down to one lane. But you put, you have construction. What does that entail that you need to get from each of those property owners? A construction access easement. When you have somebody who's on, you're jamming it in and they're on their property, the workers are going to have to go on the people's properties. That takes a construction access easement. That is not something you can condemn for. If they won't give you the construction access easement, you can't go on their property and you can't get the construction done. That is the dirty little secret of construction anytime you jam something in. It's a secret that the property owners who are being jammed in have. It applies where you're talking about a 60-foot tall hotel, 5 foot from the neighboring property owner, same deal. You can't get a construction access easement. And you don't think these people who have had their property taken and their lives and their livelihood disrupted are going to give you a construction access easement, do you? This whole, they can't get the construction access easement. They can't get the widening of the road. They can't get the stoplight. If they're going to stoplight, you're going to give it to them already. And they don't have the access, which is required by now for the conditional use. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chris. Is Mr. Greenberg here? I had him as maybe. I don't see him. So the last individual providing closing argument this evening is Ms. Newman. Is Ms. Newman here? Oh, Mr. Christ, I'm going to ask that the board members hand back the document that you handed to them.
All right.
With the understanding that tonight is not for purposes of accepting any evidence.
We're not, not evidence. Understood. It's the law.
Right. Ann Newman, 533 Elm Avenue. Thank you for the opportunity to add final comments to Governor Crossing conditional use proposal. I've stated earlier that I have reservations about its impact on the environment and the neighborhood. The most serious, however, is the impact on traffic volume and safety. The proposal includes the addition of a traffic light within 600 feet of an existing traffic light at Governor Road intersection. This requires a PennDOT waiver as it is less than half of the recommended 1,320 feet. Each foot loss will increase annoyance among drivers and impair safety. The proposal will add another turning lane to control traffic. this necessitates the addition of street curbs or barriers. The proposed will be almost 3 feet high, undoubtedly necessary, but not very pleasing to look at or to avoid hitting on cramped streets. They are specifically designed to save lives at the expense of damage to vehicles. We generally see them on major highways, not residential streets. There are unresolved issues which include the loss of two-way access to neighboring properties on Fishburne Road, potential traffic on the alley between the Fishburne properties and Cocotown subdivision, additional easements along Fishburne to widen the roadway, the impact of increased traffic on Hoppersville Road, Maple, and Elm Avenues. The traffic and pedestrian flow within the proposed proposal itself is severely constricted. This becomes a real safety issue in case of a crisis event requiring site evacuation or access to multiple emergency vehicles. So I urge the Board of Supervisors to reject this Governor Crossing conditional proposal. On the other hand, if the project is approved to the next level, I recommend responding to item 2.3 of the 10-19-22 conditional acceptance of the traffic impact study by the following: complete an up-to-date traffic study at high volume hours. It should include morning and afternoon traffic coming from the alley at the traffic signal at relocated Sand Hill Road. It should also include traffic at Fishburne Road that diverts to Maple Avenue and the two-way traffic on Elm Avenue. And also, require a demonstration of the results of the traffic study with the simulation study Sim Traffic. This is available with the analytic package Synchro, which is used in the existing study. It is a great visual tool to illustrate traffic movements and list all of the assumptions that are made on the study. So simply an issue of garbage in, garbage out when you're doing a computer study. So thank you again for your time, and this whole year has been enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. I'll ask one more time, is Mr. Greenwald here? Seeing he is not here, those are the only individuals I believe that we're proposing to provide oral argument. Mr. Getz and Mr. McNair have indicated that they would not be here tonight, and they will be submitting their written findings of fact, conclusions of law, as previously discussed in the prior hearing. Before we conclude this evening and move on to potentially some executive session discussion prior to the board's regular business meeting, I will just reiterate my understanding from the last hearing is, to the extent that the parties want to provide written proposed conclusions of law and or legal argument, those are due by October 1st. And it is my understanding that it's the intent and the anticipation of this board that they will be acting on this application at the November 14th, 2023 board meeting. Okay. Yes, Mr. Winter.
Just one point of clarification. I discussed this in an email with Mr. Nelson. October the 1st is a Sunday. And he indicated that October the 2nd.
The 2nd would be acceptable. And that just doesn't go for you. That goes for all parties. If you submit something on the 2nd, we will accept and consider it.
May I ask for a point of clarification? When the board does its deliberations, does it do so in public?
For a conditional use hearing such as this, they are able to deliberate in executive session. I suspect they will be. With no other questions or comments from the board or the members of the public or the parties, any questions or comments from the board at this time? Seeing none, I think we can conclude this portion of the hearing, which is specific to closing arguments, and we can recess potentially in executive session to discuss some legal and Chris personnel or real estate. Yep. And we'll be coming back out for the board's regular meeting at 7 o'clock.
Thank you.
Thank you.